University of Wyoming, and now the director of our research station, which is located over here at Lincoln. And currently the BQA coordinator for the state, or I have been for the last 15 years. So we'll kind of go through a few things that I want to talk about. And so this is that sheet that everybody's we're passing around. And just to kind of talk through some shoot side type of things from a BQA standpoint. I guess I like to start off, and I mentioned here at the top of this, the idea of, you know, before you start working.
I'm sorry. You getting more of this?
Sure. As you kind of get ready to work cattle, the idea of inspecting facilities first and maybe kind of doing a pre-check before you get into it. I mentioned that. I talk about, well, in my case, we work cattle on with a lot of wood facilities. So just making sure you don't have any nails sticking out, anything that might injure an animal, broken boards, anything that's going to slow you down or cause a problem with it. The other thing I talk about is, if at all possible, have a discussion with the work crew. Make sure everybody kind of knows what the goal for the day is or what their individual roles or responsibilities are. Just kind of planning some of those things out in the head. The first thing I mentioned on here is syringes. And we've got a lot of different syringes here. As you guys, if you want to walk around and look at them, you're more than welcome to. These are probably the most popular syringes. Thank you. All right, now we see most of these used, but I've kind of got about every make and model of different kind of syringes that are out there. Just some different things when you think about syringes. Make sure they're adjusted to the correct setting. I mentioned before, I've got some. We moved back to the family place. I found a cabinet that had about every generation of automatic syringe that's ever been made. And there's some pretty good antiques. I don't know if they'll ever be worth any money or not, but some pretty neat ones. The interesting thing about these, if you look at, I would kind of question the accuracy of some of these. I'm not quite sure how we adjusted. You can see how they adjusted dosage. But the issue is, you know, checking those syringes and being aware of that. If we're off by a little bit, that's probably not a problem to that individual animal. But if you bought 300 doses and you get to the end and you're 20 doses short of finishing out, making sure your things are calibrated correctly is pretty important. A lot of different syringes around here. Some of the things that have certainly changed, obviously we've gone from glass hubs to plexiglass hubs, a little safer type of a product. These are all tinted, right? The idea was trying to eliminate or reduce the amount of UV that gets to our vaccine. That's pretty important as well. And we'll talk about these coolers in a minute, but the whole idea of a vaccine, making sure we store it at 35 to 45 degrees is really important. A lot of times we worry about it getting too hot, but I think we run into as many situations where our barn fridge or our vaccine fridge might be running a little too cold. We can easily freeze vaccine, and especially our modified lives, we probably dramatically impacted its potency if we do something like that. So some different types out there. Things that I talk about is making sure that we keep the correct vaccine in each gun as we work cattle. So there's a lot of different approaches to it. As you can see, with these guns, they make, and I don't know where, but they make different colored knobs for these guns now. You can get about every color imaginable. There's blue ones, green ones, red ones, yellow ones. A good way to keep them kind of identified. If you don't have that type of syringe gun, then you can use electrical tape to mark those as well. Mark the handles of those. I think that's pretty important. And again, the idea there is, if you're given a 7-way and a modified live, which we kind of all do, especially this time of year, the issue is that modified live, if we get it in the wrong syringe, that 7-way has a different adjuvant that's going to have a big impact on that modified live. So if we happen to draw that modified live vaccine into a gun that was previously used with 7-way, that's got 7-way vaccine and 7-way adjuvant still in it, we're probably really impacting the efficacy of that vaccine in that particular gun. So trying to keep those guns straight. A lot of these new coolers really try and address that. You can see they're all divided, so you put your individual vaccines in each of the color-coded areas. That corresponds with the color on the outside of the deal. You can match up the color with your vaccine gun and hopefully keep things relatively straight, right? So good ways to eliminate that confusion, make sure we're doing it correctly. All of those things are pretty important. We talk a little bit about sterilization. And, of course, we want to sterilize using three rinses of 180-degree water, if at all possible. The idea there is we'll use water as a sterilization. We'll clean it three times. If we use any type of antibiotic or antimicrobial, the issue is if we don't get that barrel completely rinsed of that antimicrobial or antibiotic, then we may impact the vaccine that's going into that gun. So we want to use just hot water over 180 degrees to rinse those barrels out. The other thing that I didn't mention last time that we should, remember to clean and sterilize your transfer needles, right? So I think that's something we probably all forget. But transfer needles need to be cleaned and sterilized as well. There are new things out there. These are disposable transfer needles. And these are available. These are single use. Now, I don't know. I know every rancher, and every rancher is going to use it more than once. I get that. But these are another opportunity. They're all individually packaged. They can be used for similar things. So these are called transclips. They're transfer needles that are single-use transfer needles. You can take a look at those as well. And so we kind of talked about the whole idea of these coolers is we're keeping it at the correct temperature, whether you need to store it with heating brick. Here's an example of, in the wintertime, sometimes it can be too cold, so you can heat up a bag of rice just to keep it at the correct temperature inside that cooler. That's another option. Keeping it at the correct temperature is pretty important. We talked about that. Needles, again, using a 16 to 18 gauge needle is what we prefer. And if we're giving a sub-Q shot, something that's 5/8 to 3/4 of an inch long, so our 16-gauge needles are the ones with the white housing or the white hub. 18-gauge needles are in the green hub, so when you can buy them at the store, they tend to be color-coded like that. So, again, we're using 5/8 to 3/4 of an inch on sub-Q shots. We say inch to an inch and a half on intramuscular shots. I have absolutely no luck with an inch and a half needle. So I'll buy an inch needle for our intramuscular shot, but I'll never go any longer than an inch just because, you know, we're worried about that. We're contaminating that carcass, leaving something in the foreign object in that carcass. And the longer needles, the chance of, you know, of it bending or breaking off, that's a pretty critical deal when we think on down the food chain and on down the line with those types of things. Change your needles often. We talk about changing every 10 animals. I don't know if everybody necessarily does that, but I recommend at least every time you re-enter that vaccine bottle, change your needle. Go back into that vaccine bottle with a clean needle each time. That's not only that's going to reduce your contamination, and that's going to encourage you. If you're giving a 5-mil shot and you've got a 50-mil syringe, that's 10 head. If you're giving a 2-mil shot, that's 25 head. So we're changing that needle roughly when we need to be every time we re-enter that vaccine bottle. But that changing your needles is pretty important, I think. It's just something we need to, again, manage your needles carefully. Coolers. We've got a lot of different examples of coolers out here. You see we've got four of them that are commercially available coolers. Pretty neat. As we mentioned, they all have individual storage on the top. You can put those in. I think these work really nice. They're really heavy. These aren't going to blow away if you look Wyoming. This is a couple of these are three different homemade ones. This is one that I made. This is just the styrofoam cooler that my vaccine came in. I put a plywood top with a handle on it because that's the biggest issue is getting them open, I feel like. So, and I put a groove on there. I typically run mine with a ratchet strap on it. That ratchet strap fits in that groove, and you can cinch it down if you need to. So this is just a free cooler that I had put a piece of scrap plywood on and put some PVC holes in the front of it. I think these are nice. They're not quite as big as those. So if you're needing to set that cooler on a shelf or somewhere that's a little bit higher, I think these work better. They're easier to get in and out of. If you're going to rest the cooler on the floor, then these work really nice. Some of the other things to think about this is that depending on the type of syringe that you had, it might determine what cooler to use. So this works well for these pretty common type of syringe. But if you look at these Hoppner syringes and you put them in these vertical ones, watch what the handle does when you set it in one of these vertical ones. It automatically administers a dose when it hits the bottom of there. So that's maybe not the best. Now, these work fine here because you're not administering a dose when you set it in there. That works fine. But again, when you set it in these, it automatically ratchets that thing forward when you drop it down in there. So you're losing doses in the bottom of there. So that might influence, depending on what type of syringes you like to use and you're comfortable with, that might influence what type of cooler you develop. These are all homemade ones. This is one made out of a Playmate cooler, and it works equally as well. So this rests on the, we got a rice bag in there, but that rests pretty well. Here's another one that's got just underground water line in it as well. So that's something we probably all have laying around. All of these are just different examples of coolers. The idea there, keeping them at the correct temperature, whether it's 35 to 45 degrees. Now, in the summertime, that's trying to keep it cool with ice packs, right? But in the wintertime, it might be keeping it warm enough. And in this case, Philip's got a rice bag in there that you can heat up and keep kind of a heat source inside that cooler so it doesn't. I don't know, I used to run a bunch of fall calving cows, and I used to be AIing in December and January, and I can remember having my shot of GNRH, and I would tuck it in my shirt, and by the time I got it to the cow, my needle had froze shut, and I couldn't get the shot. So that's too cold to be AI cow. At that point, I was like, if it freezes from the inside of your coat to the cow, that's too cold. But again, keeping it all at the correct temperature is pretty important. I just brought a lot of different things up here. Cattle prods, a lot of different ones out here. Again, you all have your own preference, and I'm kind of fine with all of them. We've got a little bit of everything here. I always knock on rattle paddles. I'm not a big fan of rattle paddles, and this one does not rattle because the minute I got it, I drove a hole in the top of it, and I dumped all of the rattles out. I think it works great as a visual barrier, as something to get their attention, to make you look bigger, to turn an animal. I think that works great for that, but I can't stand the rattle, so I removed those. Sorting sticks work great. These are a couple of different types of flags, different lengths of flags there, and I think these, they obviously work well. Whatever you're used to, I always say, so my kids, I have two boys and a daughter. My two boys absolutely loved whips, and my comment about them is I swear I got hit with a whip more than the cattle ever did. Because they'd get in the pen, I'd be kind of standing by them, and they'd swing back like that, and I would always inevitably get hit with the whip rather than with them. But they work. I mean, certainly everybody has their own preference. We talk a lot about electric prods, and certainly we try and minimize their use if at all possible, but I'm kind of convinced, especially from a university setting, we'll have a group of cows where we bleed them once a week over an extended period of time, or we're working cattle over and over and over again, and they get to where they don't want to go down the chute. Some of it's probably facility design. I get that. That's probably a little bit of it. But in many cases, if we're in there and we've got ourselves in a bad situation or a dangerous situation trying to push a cow up the alley, or we're twisting tails to the point where, boy, to me, I think it almost would be better for everybody if we could just bump them along if we're using it correctly and using some of those types of things. So we talk a lot about using them correctly, making sure the animal's pointing forward, making sure the animal kind of recognizes where it's supposed to go, and if everything's lined up, you bump them a little bit with that and try and encourage them to go forward. I think there's still opportunities for these to work if you just don't overuse them or don't abuse them. I think that's a good thing as well. We talked a lot about implanting, and I think it's a technology that we've kind of gone away from, and I think there's still a lot of opportunities with implants from an economic, from an animal gain standpoint. So this is kind of the setup for implanting. Again, the idea is we want to implant that animal in the middle third of the ear, on the back side of the ear between the skin, or underneath the skin and above the cartilage. And so these are some different guns that are out there. And the whole idea is you want to insert those pellets in the middle third of the ear, You want them to enter in and be lined up in a straight line without crushing those implants in that ear. So there's a lot of different approaches or technologies to doing that. And so these are one, this is a spring-loaded one. So the idea is you insert the needle into the backside of the ear, you get it where you want, and then you pull the trigger. The spring loaded in there pulls the needle away from the animal and deposits the implant. So the idea is it's backing out of that groove or that tunnel that you just created, and it's depositing those implants in there without crushing them. So that's a way to do it. The Revelor implant gun is a little bit different, and it actually, to me, is a little more gentle, but there's a needle that pushes, or there's a pusher on the inside of that needle that pushes the implants out, and at the same, you can see them, it appear right there. At the same time, it's got a bar that pushes the ear away from your needle. So in both cases, it's depositing those implants without crushing them. That's the big issue. This is probably the implant gun that everybody still has, that and probably a Rougro implant gun we still have on the place. These are tried and true, and they never fail, and they're a very limited number of moving parts. Again, the issue with these, again, the same idea, but you have to manually pull that backwards as you deposit that implant. The problem is these, you tend to crowd the implants, and you tend to cluster them in the backside of the ear, and you tend to crush those implants with this because it's not automatically retracting you away from that ear as those are being deposited. So these are some of the guns that are out there. This is kind of the setup. We want ears to be relatively clean. Well, we want the ears to be very clean, if at all possible. If it's dry and clean and no manure on that ear, then we're probably good to go. But we tend to keep a bucket full of non-scent solution and a brush. If we've got to clean manure off the backside of that ear, we can do it with one or two strokes of this, get it damp, rub the manure off, we've got the ear relatively clean, then we can go in and implant. Also, we've got a scraper in here if you need to scrape something that's kind of tough to come off. Something to use. In the bottom of here, we've got sponges that we fill and kind of saturate with Nolvasan solution. So again, essentially, as that rests on there, it's resting in a solution there. We can sterilize that needle. We go in, wipe it a couple of times, implant that animal. If we miss, if we didn't get it implanted correctly, or we didn't deposit the implant, we need to go back into that ear. We probably want to clean this again before we go back and work on that same animal, just to keep that needle clear. And these little tubs with some Nolvasan solution or some type of antimicrobial in it are good. I like, especially when we use a lot of EID tags, we have a grow safe system, everything gets an EID as it comes onto the feedlot. And those things seem to be, we tend to put them a little closer to the head where the ear is thicker. They don't seem to have as wide as a shaft in them. They tend to sit a lot tighter on the ear. So we get a lot more ear infections with them. So we like to, while the tagger is empty, before you put a new tag on it, dip it in, get it at least a little bit sterilized, and then load it with the next ear tag. At least you're hopefully eliminating a little bit of that as you go. Well, we got those animals here. We'll run one more in right quick, and we'll talk a little bit about support their head, right? So if we go too high with that injection, then there's a tendency that we might irritate that nuchal ligament. And so now we've got a kid that walks with his head kind of tilted to one side until that heals, right? If we go too low, if you think about that, spinal cord dips down and then comes up. So if we go too low, we have a tendency to hit the spinal cord. Now, if our needle's only an inch long, we may not hit it. That's okay. But again, that's something we want to try and avoid. That's why we kind of talk about that triangle. We want to stay in front of the shoulder. We want to stay away from those higher value cuts. We want to avoid the nuchal ligament on the top, and we want to avoid the spinal cord down on the bottom. So that's kind of that triangle that we talk about when we get that injection. Are you the monitor? Am I? How much time I got? 10 minutes. Oh man, I got all that. All right. So again, any chance you have to work cattle safely, this shoe is nice. Obviously. We get the benefit of using a nice shoe. I have to think what else I talked about. Needles disposal. So this is an honest-to-goodness biohazard disposal kit. You can buy these through any vet supply company or catalog. These are available. What works equally well, so they're supposed to be needle or sharp resistant, right? These are essentially the same material as these. These work equally as well. So what the suggestion is, you don't just take a Walmart sack with you out there to collect your sharps, right? Something that's got the ability to resist those needles as they fall through. So any of these harder plastic containers, I think, are good. And they obviously a lot cheaper. One of the last things I wanted to talk a little bit about, we talked about I talk about a shoot side ready kit, and so everywhere we have the opportunity to go. I do a lot of carcass ultrasound in different places all around. We're working cattle at different facilities in different locations all of the time. I like these things. These are little Rubbermaid tubs that come from Walmart. I just love these things, but I kind of like this size in particular. But I call it my little ready kit, and a lot of times I'll keep an extra syringe in there. The thing that I think always goes wrong with these things is the little rubber gasket or washer that's in there. Those things seem to crack or get twisted or whatever in there. So I got a little Ziploc bag full of about 5 of those. I like to keep those around. Just kind of some different things. I always put some paper towels in there. I just listed some of the different things I like to put in there. Disinfectant and antimicrobial spray. Any extra antibiotics that you might need to treat an animal. Screwdrivers and pliers, right? How many times have you gone? So I always keep, I've kind of got my favorite set of pliers that I think works well to be able to remove the needles. Syringe if you need to tighten a Hoppner syringe gun or something like that. Or a screwdriver for that type of a thing. So just a little ready kit. I kind of like it because it's kind of got everything that I need in it and it's ready to go. It tends to follow me around in my, that's not everybody's situation, but in my case, having a kit that's kind of already put together and ready to go is kind of nice to have. The other thing I talk quite a bit about, and my disclaimer is, I've probably gotten myself into more mishaps than about anybody. I tend to be more accident prone than about anybody. And I like having a first aid kit. So, as I mentioned before, they know me on a first-name basis at Torrington Hospital. I tend to be in there if whether it's a cut or a sliver or an accidental injection or about anything, I tend to do it. But I kind of list some of the things I like to have in a little first-aid kit. It doesn't need to be elaborate. I put in there some antibiotic ointment, disinfectant spray, Band-Aids of various sizes, tweezers, slivers, or pet peeve of mine, scissors, tape or gauze pads, ibuprofen, maybe some antihistamines in there as well. Just a pretty simple kit that, I tell you, just about everybody by about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon after hearing that tailgate playing all day long, you've kind of got a headache, and an ibuprofen would be kind of a good thing about that. So something else to think about, bottled water. That's always nice to just have some on hand, whether it's to irrigate a wound or if everybody gets thirsty, anything like that. Then the last thing I put on here is the BIF shoot docility scoring. Now that's something that's been around for forever, but I think it's just kind of a handy tool to keep in the back of your mind just to think about. Again, that's a docility score or a temperament score as animals are being worked in the shoot. of one being an animal that's completely gentle and just stands still in the chute, and you can work your way up to a six. I always call a six is that animal that when it comes out of the chute, it immediately spins around and cleans your clock standing next to the chute, right? That's a six. Those do happen on occasion. But if you need a reason or an excuse or justification to get rid of an animal, there's a chute docility score right there. That's a number you can give an animal and say anything over a four is out of here, something like that. Just kind of a nice thing to have. I know we're probably preaching to the choir with the idea of just working cattle calmly, maybe taking that extra minute or two to allow that animal to find the hole before you start waving your arms and yelling. I think, you know, we take a few extra seconds. It may seem like we're taking more time to get something done, but if we can minimize the trips to the hospital or minimize the number of panels we got to fill a hole with, some of those types of things, we're probably time ahead by doing a little bit of that. So I think that's all. I see a whole group standing back here. They've already heard my spiel. But if you've got any questions or you'd like to look at anything, want to ask any questions, the thing I didn't talk a little bit about and get to is a lot of times we will use intranasal shots. And this is just kind of a neat design. Philip brought this in. Just kind of a keyhole design at the top of this lid. A lot of the times, if you want to change these, you're using your hand, you're going to twist off the dirty one, and then you use the same hand to put a clean one back on there, so you just contaminated your clean one. He's got kind of a keyhole design in here that you can put it in and pop it off, and it's already fallen in your container, and then you can put a clean one on with that. So just little tools, just little things like that you can use.